According to a study published in the American Academy of Pediatrics, less work and more play helps a child to learn, develop socially, and promotes better health. Researchers also reported that curbing free time at school robs youngsters of needed exercise, leads to unruly classrooms, and ultimately the tragedy of listening to...
Station prompts outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
When a waitress uses a gun to raise the caliber of her service, David Caruso has the case scattered, smothered, and covered on the next CSI Miami. What do we got?
Well, Horatio, a Waffle House waitress is accused of shooting a customer who was having eggs and toast. She says she won't talk.
I guess we can do this the hard way or the over easy way. David Caruso is egging on his team in a mad scramble for justice. This case is hot, and the plate is too, on CSI Miami.
She confessed, Horatio. The powder burns you found on the breakfast sausage did it.
I'm not surprised. I knew we'd find the link. When it comes to right and wrong, David Caruso never waffles on the next CSI Miami.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Bacon-Eating Fool.
Mr. Bacon-Eating Fool.
Some say it's just for breakfast. Oh, no, no, no. You know that any time is the right time to fry, microwave, or throw a heaping helping in the oven. Oh, connoisseur of sliced swine.
Cure that hunger with pure pork belly.
That's not bacon. It's bacon on bacon.
And it needs a little more bacon, yeah.
So the next time you crave a four-scene plateful of bacon brittle, a bacon-wrapped filet, bacon-covered pizza, chocolate-covered bacon, or a bucket of bacon bits, we'll tip our pork pie hat to you, Mr. Bacon-Eating Fool, a real American hero.
Mr. Bacon-Eating Fool.
You don't just eat bacon. You let it melt in your mouth like meaty candy.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on radio. It's Sam in the Morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And good morning and welcome to Friday. We're live February 19th. Good morning, Kara. Oh,
such a good day to be alive. It's not sunny.
Not sunny.
Oh, man.
But we do have a winter day.
You know.
You think it's going to rain today?
I think they're saying it's going to rain. Here's the thing. We're not ready for rain in this town. It doesn't work. It's not our thing.
Yeah.
We don't have enough antidepressants to really offset the overcast. I don't belong to a gym.
Uh-huh.
Because we live in LA. You can just go running, hiking, do whatever. But then you get like, you know, 3 weeks of like odd amount of rain and you're just like, oh my gosh, I can feel the weight creeping on as we speak.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to work out in my apartment.
Yeah, I know. I happen to love rain a lot and we don't get enough here.
Really? Where are you going to go skipping it or are you going to go jumping?
Something like that. Really? Play in the rain, yeah.
Can't wait. YouTube it. I want to see it.
Yeah. Well, you brought us a great guest to the studio, a beautiful woman.
She's
and why don't you introduce her to us?
Everybody. All the way from Toronto, Canada, and from the Broadway in New York, and from Slam Dance in Utah, from my apartment in Los Angeles, is one of my best friends and amazing, amazing, talented, funny, and songstress woman I introduce to you. Sarah Cornell.
There you go. Welcome, Sarah.
Oh, thanks, you guys.
Yeah,
thanks
you need to get closer
on.
To the mic.
Okay,
so we can
here
hear
I
you.
Am.
Yeah. You can
Hi.
Pull it towards you so you don't have to lean in if you want. Just pull the whole thing over.
All right. I
yeah,
feel like this
go.
Is a really lackluster
no,
right. hello now. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful
it?
Hello.
Oh, God. Hello? Just bring in. Yeah. There you go.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah.
And Houston, we're back in business.
Yeah, she has to bend over because she's so tall, right?
This American technology is throwing me off.
Yeah, there you go. So the first thing that strikes me is you're very tall. How tall are you?
I'm 6'2".
Really?
No one's ever told me that before.
Really?
No.
I guess not from a 5'8 person, right? Never heard that before.
And that's 6'2 without heels.
Yeah.
With heels on, Sarah, come on, you're like not even human, right?
Yeah.
No. That's why I live in LA.
So you're originally from Toronto?
Yes.
Really?
Uh-huh.
That's cool. And you grew up there.
Very cold. Yes, I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know it's cold. I used to have we were talking about long-distance relationships, and I had one with a girl in Toronto. So I would go there like every 2 months, every 6 weeks or something. So I know the city pretty well, you know, and it's a really nice place. Great people.
Yeah, and, Canadian chicks rock, so...
They do, huh?
Yeah, it's okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. They're all right. They're very, like, maple leafy and, like, you know...
No, we're down to earth.
Hockey girls.
Yeah, yeah, we'll go out and play sports.
When's the last time you played hockey,
and then,
Sarah?
You know...
Hey, listen, that's not the point.
Yeah. They go tubing a lot, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Tubing.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah, playing in the snow.
Playing in the snow.
Yeah, it gets very cold there. Have you been there?
I've never been, but I still love to judge it. You know,
well, that's okay. You're from Texas, so I got plenty of material on you.
Well, you know, it's just fun to play the stereotypes and, you know.
Yeah.
And do it to you almost mean it, but not quite. Enough to really make them go, wait a minute. And then you're like, oh, I'm just playing. I'm a comedian. So it doesn't count.
So you grew up in Toronto, and at what point did you decide to move here?
I decided about 3 years ago that I was going to make the move. I'm a writer performer, so the
really?
Natural
so
fit.
You felt confined there.
Yeah. We have a pretty good theater and film and TV creative
right.
community, but it's really limited after a while. A lot of the money that you use to produce work up there is government funded, so it's not as commercial
right
of a
and you wanted to be
industry.
In Hollywood.
Yeah.
Tell them real quick, just because it is very educational, how it is necessary to make the move to LA once you've kind of maxed out there. Sarah, obviously her height, right? She stands out because of her height, but she's incredibly, even though she's gorgeous, for you guys at home, she's like a life-size Barbie. She's like, whatever, but you know it's true.
That's a good description.
She's like a life-size Barbie, but she's so funny and she's so talented, and we'll get into all that later, and I'll make her like dance for dance and sing for us. But not just playing. But she expressed to me that because of the climate and the industry there, it's like you can only shine so bright, and it was time to kind of make that move because, well, things localize. So you know, LA is the entertainment capital of the world, and you know, Canada's the hockey capital of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I guess so.
So or curling, or I don't know. If I wanted to be a Mountie, I'd be...
But no, but you've told me several times, like, when we first hung out, when Sarah and I first started hanging out, I mean, I'd be like, with my heels and my hair. And Sarah's like, you know what? That's really who I am. And she was like, I'm really frills to the max. And I'm like really hair and lashes. And she just said that the climate up there just didn't really foster the extreme fun. And the
No. You know. When you have 8 months of winter, it's like hunker down, get on your three protective layers of long johns, and just try to survive. Gather food and store it in your cheeks, and just, you know.
Yeah. There
and
you
just
go, for a rainy day.
Find a place
for
warm.
A snow day.
That's how you work when you're buried in snow, you know. You kind of.
Yeah.
But I'm also trying to get you to say something you're not saying.
I know, because you think that I live in some socialist country
that's
where
not
I'm
what
going
I'm going at. That's
like everyone comrade. And
no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you've told me before that there's like a tall poppy syndrome.
Yeah, there is a tall poppy
okay,
syndrome.
Okay, talk about that for a second.
They say that American actors need I ruined the joke. American actors need bodyguards. Canadian actors need name tags. So
yeah,
you know.
I guess what I'm trying to get her to say, and she's not saying it, is that she's
such a star, and she's so listen, I'm gonna get my brag on because
I can brag now because I've lived in America for a year and a half. I'm freaking amazing now. I'm firing on all cylinders.
Well, if you've earned it, go ahead and say it.
That's the mentality that we don't have in Canada. We're like, oh, don't look at me. I'm just a small spider. I just hang out.
Yeah.
But the thing is like, you are, you know, you are so unique, and you can't not, even when,
no, can't,
even,
can't
even when Sarah, I mean, she is a very, the thing with Sarah that I love that I don't, that I'm not so much, but whatever, takes a lot of different people to make the world go around, is Sarah, for as talented as she is, she has a lot of humility, whereas I'm just like, you know.
It's false humility.
Is it really?
Canada, we also have a lot of false humility up there.
Really?
Sure. I mean,
very proud people.
Well, it's just that everyone's like, so, you know, I'm nothing special. It's just kind of a, I'm obviously exaggerating, but there is a sense of false humility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I just guess that Sarah, you know, Sarah knows how to turn it on, and she, you know, but she's at the same time, she's like very, you know, grounded and, you know, so.
Yeah.
But this girl's done a lot.
So how did you guys meet?
Go for it, Sarah.
We met at a Bible study through Mosaic Church here in LA.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
We did.
Wow.
We ditched the Bible study, but it was love at first sight.
Yeah, wow.
How
did you both end up in Bible study?
Well, we're both Christians.
I took a wrong turn.
I thought it was
I know a lot of Christians that don't take Bible study.
You know what? And that's interesting. You know, for me, living in LA, I find that if you don't carve out a community, whether that's because of your faith or because of, you know, just needing a social outlet or whatever, if you don't go out of your way to carve out and make friends, you can live anonymously here and just disappear.
Right.
And I was really wanting to connect with other believers and, you know, meet different people and learn, you know, learn more about the scriptures and really kind of harvest that. And I got there, and the people were really awesome, but it just wasn't really a fit for me.
Yeah.
And then Sarah and I met, and it was just like, hey, what are you doing Friday?
Wow, that's cool. That's cool. So you guys knew that there was something there and stuff.
Yeah, I was like,
never seen you looking so gorgeous as you did it tonight. Never seen you shine so bright.
No, it's not. It's totally not.
Too much estrogen in the studio.
Oh, my God. No, it was fun. It was actually funny because I think what happened was I was always, you know, everywhere I go, it's like.
Oh, totally.
And I was walking in, and I was just like so happy.
Late,
always late. Spoke the first. I was like late. And I'd be like, and another thing. And I can't, you know, like just always having some crazy point. Uh-huh. And, yeah.
We're kind of like Oscar and Felix. We're like the odd couple, but
kind of.
Really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, at what point after you guys met did you decide you're going to move in together or, be roommates?
Well, it's one of those things where, like, we were always hanging out. I was always over at her house. This really sounds like we're having some kind of, like, romance. It's really not
good.
Like that.
Well,
I totally love men.
That's where we're going.
Yeah, I know. Thanks. Sam's trying to direct some of you crazy men.
No, it's not. The night show.
Yeah, but no, we were always hanging out together. Uh-huh. And then, it was like, well, you know, Sarah's on an O-1 visa, and it was one of those, like, conserve, live within your means, because you don't, you know, you never know when.
So I'm cheap by nature, though. My mom is Scottish, so I have that sort of, you know, frugal, you know, blood.
Right.
And every time I do something cheap, actually, I have a friend that makes, like, the bagpipe sound. Just like, I'm like, sharing a room.
When we say we're roommates, it's very literal.
Uh-huh.
Like, really? One room?
Yeah.
We actually share a room.
Like a studio apartment?
Well, no, there's multiple rooms, but we don't have multiple rooms. We share one of the rooms.
I see.
You know, it's not uncommon, but when you tell people, they do freak out. Like, what are you doing? Do you know that's not good for your health? It's bad. But no, I mean, you know, but you do have to be compatible with the person and have a chemistry to be able to do something.
Obviously.
It's called living the dream.
So where is that room where there's other rooms that you can't go into?
It's in Hollywood.
That's not what I meant. I mean, is it like a house, an apartment?
No, it's straight up apartment.
Okay. And there's people living in the other room?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
We have a very unique situation.
It sounds very unique.
We hate to use the word commune, but
we want to stay away from the words like hippie and things like that, and you know.
But
you can't get away from it.
No, it's actually very funny. I have really great friends from Texas that moved out here. And they had a two-bedroom apartment, and I ended up moving in with them. Mm. And the thing is my friend, she's married, but her husband works in Houston, Texas, and commutes weekly to L.A.
Really?
You know, he flies from work, and it's very unique. And so he's kind of there on the weekend. She's there during the week, and then I moved in, and it was like kind of a girls' pad, and then on the weekend we all hang out or whatever, or I'd, you know, let them hang out and disappear for a little bit. And then it just turned out like it was kind of like, hey, Sarah should move in too and save money. And she did. And now it's like one big, it's like people always ask us because there's three crazy blonde girls and my other roommate's blonde too. And we didn't plan it that way. It just happened.
It just happened.
We didn't know it happened. It just happened. But they asked, they go, oh my gosh, this is like got to be like a guy's fantasy.
Yeah.
They're like,
dream pad.
And the reality is it is.
It kind of, all the things you think that would go down in a room full of three girls actually does, like,
and we don't plan it. It just does.
Tickle fights.
I'm in the kitchen the other day, and Claire's busted out her music, and she's dancing to Lady Gaga, and she just got out of the shower, and I'm in the kitchen, way far away from the shower. She runs into the kitchen. She's like, "Hey, Kara." She's like, "Da da 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 da," and she just opens up her towel and just flashes me real quick and checks, and then she runs. She woohoo, and then she runs back into the bathroom. I'm like, Claire, I'm cooking. But it's just funny. I don't know. I mean,
is funny. I guess
really
when you live in close proximity, these things happen. I mean,
you can't be a princess. You can't.
But what do you do without privacy? I mean, it sounds like there's someone there all the time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So no privacy, huh? I mean, for privacy, you go out and you go to a guy's house or something.
Oh, you mean like that?
Not necessarily that, but I mean, just privacy. I don't know if you like want to.
I'm a big fan of coffee shops. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do that. Sarah is like alone for 5 minutes and my phone rings. She's like, "Hey, what are you doing? Hey, let's hang out." Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Or like vice versa.
Yeah, right.
You
yeah, right.
Hang out with me all the time.
Whatever. Sarah's like, "Hey, what's going on?" Blowing up my phone. I'm like, "Girl, you need a step. You need a step." Hey, I feel like I'm struggling in this relationship. No. I mean, it just kind of works out.
Yeah.
Doesn't you think? I mean, you do have to forego privacy, but that's like, you know.
Yeah.
Not a priority.
It's location, location, location. We have a great location. Great location.
Mm-hmm. And for as packed as it's been, we've had a lot of great gatherings and parties and more gatherings, you know. So it's been really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of not a bad idea, you know. I mean, you're never alone, like you said. You know, I mean, you're like, there's always company and stuff. There's always someone there.
Always.
I don't know. I kind of need privacy every once in a while, but I can see, you know. I mean, you guys are like in your 20s and stuff. You know, you can afford to do this and enjoy life, you know.
Well, the thing is, we can't afford to do what you're doing, so that's why we do this. It's like we can, yeah. But it's kind of like the before story, like I said, that just keeps going on and on. It's fun. I feel really blessed. The only thing is like, you know, they make a joke because I doing comedy and music is a nighttime thing, but I'm just more of a morning person than nighttime. So, you know, 10 o'clock at night hits and I start getting like a little loopy, a little bit, I look kind of drunk and I'm like, I got to go to bed. We've had several parties where 2 a.m. hits and people are still there and I don't even say bye or good night. I just walk like a zombie to my room like,
no, Kara hits a wall. Kara has two settings, dialed up to 11 or 0. and it's either, you know, this or it's like, boo, flatline.
And she calls me Graham. She's like,
I call her Grams.
Because I'm always like, okay, Sarah, lights are off in 5 minutes. She's like, so then Sarah like goes into the room acting like she needs to power out some emails or like digging through her closet. She's like, I got starts to tear. You're forcing me out of the room. And she starts going through like a survival.
Well, when you're going to bed at 8:30, I'm can I get a couple things out of the room?
Right. It is funny though.
Oh, man.
They call me Grams though.
Yeah. But I guess you get used to it, to the arrangement and everything, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've done it before. I've worked on cruise ships.
Really?
Where you share a room and it's like a closet sized room. It's very small. And, you know,
but at the ship, you can hang out in different places and stuff, right?
You know,
don't have to be in the cabin.
It's actually worse because on a ship, you know, people know you and the passengers know you. So they sort of want to talk to you at all times. So everything's communal sort of area.
That's true. So they don't leave you alone kind of a thing.
It's hard to find alone time on a ship.
Did you work there as a performer? Is that what you
did? Yeah. I've done two ships. I did one when I was 21 and it was in Hawaii and it was a singer dancer role, and then most recently, I guess about 3 years ago, I worked with Second City on a on a cruise ship.
That's cool, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long were you at sea? I mean, those are short cruises and stuff, mm-hmm. right? Those fun cruises and that.
Yeah. Usually the contracts are about 4 to 7 months.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. But the cruises are like up to 7 days, mm-hmm. not more than that. Right?
Oh, yeah. We had a couple 10 days thrown in, right. you know, but it was mainly just...
Yeah. That's cool. You know, the TJ used to work ships,
oh, really?
Too, as
yeah.
a comedian. Yeah.
That's cool. Oh, yeah. It's good money if you're a comedian.
Really?
Yeah. You know,
more
you
than
get treated
musician?
Like... yeah, I'd say.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, because they get their own act and uh-huh. it's on the main stage and everything. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds cool. Wow. So you're into music, obviously, right?
Yeah, right. I love music.
Yeah, so do you sing? Do you play? What?
I sing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sounds good. So that's another thing you have
in
common.
Yeah, Sarah's actually... can you share a brief kind of overview, or not brief, but, you know, just an overview of Sarah actually starred on Broadway as Ula in the musical The Producers.
Oh,
as
I see.
The tall, tall blonde girl. I mean, she took tall to a different level. They were thinking 5'7 or 5'8, and Sarah's like, whoo! And at 23, she starred on Broadway, and it's a really pretty cool story. Go for it, Sarah.
Oh.
So you went on Broadway?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was...
That's pretty cool. How long ago was that?
That was when I was 23, so 2003.
2003.
Yeah,
so that's some time ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how did you get the part?
It was kind of a rags to riches kind of experience, because I, up until that point, I had just, you know, graduated college and...
Right.
And was, you know, working a kid's show for $300 a week, bringing my own costume, and thought I'd made it, you know?
Yeah,
and then,
that's a way to start.
Yeah. Yeah, and so they were auditioning for the Toronto production, and I just kept advancing, you know, through the various auditions. I just kept getting more and more, you know, whittled down to...
Right, closer to Broadway.
Yes, and right. then, you know, I got the big call, and it was just... you know, mind-boggling for me, and actually, you know, really overwhelming, because I'd never even been to New York, so.
That's true. So you have acting in you as well, obviously, more than just singing.
Yeah, that's...
So did you discover that at an early age? I mean, did you realize that's what I want to do?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I always wanted to. It wasn't really something that I, you know, was able to plug into.
Right.
For whatever reason, but I always danced. So
You went to theater school.
I went to theater college. Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's really in high school is when
college,
I started taking it serious.
Yeah.
You would. College. I've got a diploma in jazz hands. Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Sorry about that.
Theater college.
Yeah, excuse me.
I can give a shot of a kick ray. Back off. But Sarah's actually done. I mean, the cool thing with is that when I say she's maxed out in this sense, she really did. A lot in Canada on TV shows, and take it away, Sarah.
So that's cool. So you were doing TV as well.
I did we have like our own little version of Saturday Night Live up in Canada. It's called Comedy Inc. And so I was a writer and performer on that, and
really?
Yeah, I've done a couple TV shows on the CBC. And
So that's interesting. I mean, you were busy there, and still you decided to move to Hollywood and stuff. So
yeah, I just wanted to take it to the next level. And, I was ready for a new adventure, and I just can't do another winter in Canada.
Yeah,
I'm not
much,
a cold.
Huh?
I don't like the cold. I'm a grandma. I like it warm, hot.
Yeah, and that's interesting, you know, because I see people growing in cold climate, and still they don't get used to it, you know.
Mm-mm.
Yeah,
it's like,
not like
I guess
they
you never
adjust.
Do.
I think there's something about the, I don't know. Maybe it's not that they like the resistance. I don't know. I've heard one person out here say, oh, you know what? I miss the winters, because it's almost like you have to barrel through it, and there's like a sense of like accomplishing something. And I was like, oh man, I got enough problems, you know, bundling up and hard enough, and you know, talking about the weather with everybody. I don't know.
No,
I got bigger problems.
Yeah,
like my freaking DMV tickets. But whatever, we'll talk about that in a second. But Sarah also, a couple things, just came back from Utah from the Slam Dance Film Festival, where she just actually, she wrote and performed in an awesome movie, which I love, and it's called Planet Sun, the Tanfastic Adventures of Shay and Stay. And Sarah just got back from Slam Dance, and it was really, really great. Tell us about that, Sarah. Tell us about your film. Tell us about everything.
Yeah.
Oh,
you
wow.
should be her agent, for crying out loud.
I know.
She,
you know,
sure can
she does
you,
this for
huh?
me, though.
Yeah.
I mean, when it's
true.
I mean, Sarah just, like, builds me up when it's And I love it. I don't sit back like, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take an autograph.
Oh, yeah. I'm Team Kara for sure. I'm riding those coattails all the way to the top, baby. Starting here, you've at LA Talk Radio. This is the big debut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she promotes me. She sends me stuff.
Really? Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. So you're in Utah as well. So you filmed a movie there? Is that what? That was the festival,
The festival was there. Right. I actually shot the movie back in Toronto, Canada, which is what's great about Canada is that there's so many wonderfully talented people. There's so many resources. You can get things done, and everyone has more of a sense of camaraderie. Everyone helps each other out a little more, whereas down here, you know, it's going to cost you to get anything done, and everyone's looking to make a buck, and every DOP you meet wants to write, direct, star in the project as well. You know, people don't know their limits down here a little bit. You know, delusional when it comes to.
So true, though.
Well, you have to be to survive in this town, you know.
Delusional?
Yes.
Yeah, well.
You have to believe that you're going to be something.
Well, I think what she's saying is that it's people, everybody's got their own singular creative vision. Mm. So when you're trying to get something done, everybody wants to kind of monopolize and they want to. You know,
I think there's a bit of a mentality, in America that, you know, you're entitled. If you can dream it, you can do it. And it's like,
what's wrong with that?
Well, it's just a bit of an individualistic kind of society where
yet you're sitting here in LA.
No, I know that. I'm talking about one of the drawbacks is when you try to collaborate with other people, they don't get that they're limited in writing or in other aspects of the production. They want to do it all. They want to butter the popcorn in the theater. They want to star in it. And you're like, whoa. I'm just asking if you want to shoot something, not, take over. But it's like, you know, everyone wants to build their own little empire. So
that is true.
That's
true.
Very interesting.
Yeah. You got to know your limits. Yeah. You know, that's part of, becoming really honed at what you do because you realize that, okay, I got to put my energies into my strengths rather than trying to do it all. And, Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Kira has no limits, so she does.
I just don't identify, Sarah. By the way, I'll be directing, starring in your next film and writing it. In fact, I think I'll give you like a little side role. Let's call you a producer. How's that sound?
Well, that sounds great.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be very hard. I mean, you know, a lot of people have this dream of coming to Hollywood and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I sort of admire that because, I mean, it's like you believe there's no indication you're going to make it or anything like that. You know you're going to a place that's very, very competitive, and yet you still do it, you know, and you believe in yourself and you believe you'll make it, you know.
Oh, yeah. We talk about that all the time and just how romantic it is that people come out here with a dream and they just want to do something amazing.
Sarah and I always say it's like... We always say it's called clogging the pipes. You get these girls and these guys that somebody told them they had nice teeth. And they're like, I'm going to make it as a star. So what happens is they come out to Hollywood and they probably should be an assistant or like a 9-to-5 or somewhere doing something, pushing a pencil. And they come out here and they're very business oriented. So they can do the business side very good.
Right.
And we call it clogging the pipes because all of their talentless but yet very organized crap is in the way from the people that are like really creative and hippie-ish but can't get the postcards out and can't get the website built and can't social network. And so it's just a funny thing because you get people that are great at the networking and great at the business side, but really just they're not specific. They don't really have the talent. Or even really the right dream for themselves, but they came out here for like maybe the lifestyle or the idea of it.
Right.
And what happens is it saturates and saturates the place. So there are a lot of really talented people that are just, so it is competitive.
And
but
it is that sense of entitlement too, because you get people coming up to you going, I could do that. I could do that. And it's like, no, it's like, it takes a lot of work. You know, there's no overnight success in this industry. So to meet people that are like, you know, on a time schedule of like 6 months to become a huge star is just
But that's
comedy.
The weird thing is that there are some overnight successes. There are, I mean, it's not the norm, it's not normative, but there.
Well, that's the funny part is there's no A plus B equals C and there's no rules and, you know.
No, people come out here and, you know, stumble across something sometimes and for whatever reason, boom, fast track.
Yeah,
and
it's not all about the art for everybody.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, we better call our guest today.
Okay.
We're going to call Noah Boyd, who wrote the book The Bricklayer, and that's a fiction book about an FBI agent, and we're going to talk to him about this because this guy is an agent for real, and or was. So we're going to find out. This is a cool book because, let me tell you, I started reading this, and it really sucks you in, you know?
Does it? What page are you on?
Or what? I'm like on chapter 7. I don't know. I took the bookmark out. Mm. But apparently that's not his
Hello?
Real name. Yes, good morning, Mr. Boyd.
Yes.
Yes, this is Sam, Kara, and Sarah calling you from LA Talk Radio. How are
Hello.
You doing this morning?
Hi.
Good, how are you?
We're good. What part of the country are you in?
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Okay, so it's got to be cold and snowy up there.
Well, actually, it's a little snowy, and it's fairly warm for us. It's in the 40s.
Oh, I guess that is warm, relatively speaking.
Oh, wow.
We would be all bundled up at 40 degrees, yeah. So, Noah Boyd, I guess you say this is not your real name, and this is sort of a pseudonym, since you are a former FBI agent. Is that correct?
That is right.
I see. How long have you served in the FBI, or did you?
Over 20 years.
20 wow. years. Wow, that's a long time. And your book focuses on serial killers, and is this something that you are involved in as well?
The book is actually about an extortion, but I did,
right.
The end of my career, that's what I was doing for the FBI, was looking for serial killers.
Right.
Like Dexter?
You're the second one to ask me about that.
Really? Is that just such like a cheesy, obvious joke?
I've never seen the show.
Okay, yeah. Well, never mind. Back to you.
Yeah. So the book does have to do with extortion, but I know there are several killings in there as well.
Right,
and I got to tell you, I have to admit, you know, usually interviews on fiction books are not as easy, but I was really taken in by the book because it's, you know, I like that kind of genre and stuff, but you really started off with action right away, and it's really a race from there, I guess, to find the killers and the extortionist. Now, tell us a little bit about the character. His name is Steve Vail, and tell us a little bit about the plot.
Okay, Steve Vail is the main character, and when the book starts, he is actually working as a bricklayer. It's something he did. That's how he worked his way through college, and his father was a bricklayer. Uh-huh. He's working as a bricklayer. But he had previously been fired by the FBI for insubordination. But now, because of certain skills that he has, the FBI is forced to recruit him back into service
right.
to deal with this group of extortionists who are killing killing high-profile people and demanding millions of dollars to stop.
Right. And they're actually killing enemies of the FBI, which is interesting.
Well, that's a media term,
right.
As I point out in the book. It's the FBI doesn't have an enemies list per se, but it's
right.
The media consider them because these are people that have made careers at being at odds with the FBI.
Right, right. So this is interesting. Now, when I was reading your background a little bit, I realized there's a lot of similarities between your life and, or let's say, your experience with the FBI and Steve Vail.
Well, I think we have gone down several of the same roads, but because of the luxury of rewrites, he's made far fewer mistakes than I have.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I would imagine. So what I've always been fascinated is why would someone get a job with the FBI? Obviously not all of it is dangerous and stuff. I know there's a lot of pencil pushers and that sort of thing. But how do you get into something like this?
Well, the requirements for an agent, and it's been a while, but it's you need a college degree and 3 years experience with that degree. And there are exceptions to that, like if you have a law degree, they'll take you without the 3 years experience. Or if you're maybe a language program, if you speak fluently a language that the bureau needs, or if you're a pilot, something along that line, or a scientist. computer expert, anything like that.
Right.
And the background's pretty thorough, as you'd want it to be. And the process, I think it took me a better part of a year to go through the process.
Right. And what made you decide you wanted to get into the FBI? I mean, obviously, it's not a usual thing. A person gets up in the morning and says, I want to be an FBI agent. How did that come about?
Well, I think some people do. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood in the west side of Chicago where most of the guys I knew either went to jail or became cops. In fact, I think some did both.
That's
but, you know, it always, I guess, you know, watching TV, I always thought solving cases would be, you know, as rewarding as anything I could do. So that's what I did for 20 years.
And was it as rewarding as you thought it would be?
Yeah, it was. It actually was. And I'm not, I'm a person that's easily disappointed, but it really was. Especially my last case was a guy who raped and strangled 11 women. And when we got him, he said in 2 weeks he was going to kill another one for his birthday. So, you know, things like that, that's pretty rewarding.
Yeah. So you've obviously seen some action in the field and that sort of thing. So, now, how did you, I mean, had you written before? Is this something that you always liked to do, or was it something that you realized after you left the FBI that maybe I should tell a story?
Well, actually, it was while I was in the FBI. I was, I think I'm still the only FBI agent ever to publish a book while he was an agent.
Oh, wow. Are there any kind of, like, legality issues involved with, you know, being an author while you're still, you know, working as an FBI agent? You know what I mean? As far as intel or things like that.
Making intelligence.
Right. Actually, I was told, see, every book has to be reviewed by law to make sure I'm not giving away any secrets.
Right. And they
reviewed it, and they said, well, it's publishable, but you can't publish it.
Really?
And I said, well, I am going to publish it, and we'll let the lawyers fight it out. Because I knew legally they didn't have a leg to stand on because of some things they had done in the past.
Right.
So they said, well, okay, you're under investigation for insubordination by OPR, which is the Office of Public Responsibility, which is the FBI's internal affairs.
Right.
So that's how I ended my career, finding the serial murderer and answering these charges at the same time.
Wow.
That's so crazy. Yeah.
So that's kind of a disappointing ending, I guess, to a 20-year career.
Well, I saw it coming. That's really why I wrote the first book, because I saw how top-heavy the Bureau had become with management, and as a result, the street agents were being crippled by these obstructionists, just worried about their careers and not, you know, investigating and solving violations of federal law, which is what an FBI agent is supposed to do.
Right.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. Did you at a certain point consider maybe writing a nonfiction book before you wrote this novel? In other words, to sort of like share your experiences, or did the novel was, I mean, was that like the first thing that that you wanted to go after?
Well, the while I was writing this, there was a guy called me, and he and his partner and a writer who actually did the writing, but they had experience. They worked the Paul Castellano case, the name of the book was Boss of Bosses.
Uh-huh.
And he was telling me how much trouble he had, you know, because in a nonfiction book, you got to get everybody to sign off, you know,
that's
whatever
true.
The releases mm-hmm. are. And he's saying how much work and trouble it was. So me being lazy, I said, no, I'm gonna go with fiction. I don't have to have anybody sign off. But
that
what happened was I was out in 1986. I went out to Seattle for 3 months to work at Green River Murders.
Right.
And when I got back, I thought, geez, my mind is just, you know, it works fine for FBI stuff, but I have no interest in anything else. So I went to adult education class. I was going to take a math class. Not that I was ever good at math, but, I like the puzzles.
Uh-huh. Mm.
And they said, well, we don't have a math class this quarter. I said, what do you have? They said, well, we got a creative writing class. So I said, okay, fine. So I took the class, and after I handed in the first short story, the instructor pulled me aside. She was publishing her second novel. She said, you know, with the way you write and your life experiences, you could probably do this professionally. So that's kind of how it started.
That's so cool that she really nurtured that, too, you know.
Absolutely. And you do have a gift for writing. You know, I read a lot of fiction books and stuff, and I really think you have a way about, you know, going with the story. And I was definitely impressed with it, and it's something that drew me in. I also understand you're going to – this is a first book on Steve Vail, and you're planning more?
Right. When we sold this book to William Morrow, it was part of a three-book deal, and the one thing they wanted was the male and female characters in every book. That's about the only requirement they put on it. Right. Thank you.
Yes. So interesting. I've got a question for you.
Sure.
You know, hunting serial killers and serious criminals, and you've worked so closely and intricately in those types of crimes. What insight do you have to the mind of like a serial killer? I mean, as a, you know, let's say a civilian that doesn't work hands-on in that department, you know, it's very night and day. It's really hard to understand that mindset. And what would you say with your experience that you've been really able to kind of understand that mentality?
Well, first of all, and I think maybe some of the confusion with this is you asked me about serial killers in the book, and the media has kind of lumped anybody who kills more than one person into they dub them a serial killer.
Right.
But for me, a serial killer is it's a sexual homicide.
Oh.
Even if there's no assault at the scene, like with the BTK guy in Kansas, he would, you know, he would use the memories to later trigger gratification.
Right.
But they're basically sexually driven, these homicides. That's the reason for them. And there's usually no connection between the victim and the killer. They're random, or they're stalked anonymously, and that's why they're hard to catch, because there's, you know, a regular homicide, if there is such a thing, you know, there's a motive.
Right.
And if you know, look around and talk to enough people, you're going to find out the motive, and then you'll find out the killer. That's usually the way it happens.
Right.
But with serial killers, it's a completely anonymous crime. So the way you go after them is you try to find patterns, like this guy I got in Detroit just before I left. I had learned from both the Green River murders and from Ted Bundy. I didn't work on Ted Bundy, but I studied the case.
Right.
They were both caught because of surviving witnesses. So that's the first thing I did when I got to Highland Park in Michigan. I said, do you have any tips? They had about 100 tips. I went through there, and I found one woman who was a surviving victim of the guy. He had raped her, and then he tried to strangle her, and she got away from him and ran off. So once I got her, you know, and found her, which wasn't all that easy because she called in using the wrong name, but once we got her in tow, she led us to him.
Wow. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that's why I guess they can't leave any tracks behind, like any criminal.
Right.
Yeah. Noah, this is fascinating. We could spend hours, I think, talking about this stuff. You obviously have experienced quite a bit. You've witnessed some crimes and you know, and terrible things. Does this leave a mark on you?
Well, you know, I was... the 3 years experience I had to get into the FBI, I was a Marine Corps infantry officer, and at that time Vietnam was going on. So I spent 13 months, I had the privilege of leading Marines in combat in Vietnam. So this stuff wasn't that bad. It's, you know, this is a much more controlled environment
I see.
Than combat. So,
wow.
I can pretty well compartmentalize everything. Yeah. So
I guess you have
I
to.
I never brought it home with me. I would come home and play ball with my son or go running with my daughter, whatever.
Right. Well, the book is The Bricklayer. Everybody go out and get it, and I'm sure it's available everywhere. Do you have a website regarding
the
book?
No, I don't.
Or anything?
I don't.
Okay.
But you guys are in L.A., right?
Yes, we're in L.A., but we're heard all over the world, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yes, yeah,
well,
absolutely.
I was going to just say that the bulk of the book takes place in L.A.
Right, exactly. And
Most crimes do.
Yeah, most crimes do.
Most of them do. Right by my house, actually. 3 a.m. You can hear the choppers.
I don't know. Detroit wants to make a bid into that.
Yeah, they're pretty rough down there.
I used to live
there,
in Detroit. Yeah.
Did you really?
I lived there for 4 months outside of Detroit, and I do know Highland Park, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be world headquarters for Chrysler.
Yeah.
It used to be very affluent.
Yeah, it used to be, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So you lived in several places in the country, I'm sure, as well.
Well, I grew up in Chicago, spent 20 years in Detroit, and then we, of course, a side trip to Vietnam, but and then I wanted the antithesis of Detroit culturally in every other way, so that's why I moved to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
When I retired.
A little different, mm-hmm. Yeah, a little quieter.
Wow.
All right, Noah, thank you so much again. The
Thanks,
book is
Noah.
The Bricklayer, and you definitely have a loyal reader in me, so keep up.
Thanks very much. And Sunday, the book's going on to the expanded New York Times bestseller list at number 22.
Congratulations. Very nice.
Congratulations.
I figured it would do well. It's written very well. So, again, Noah, thank you so much and all the best to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Very nice man.
He's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to be able, to go through this type of a career and then write a book, and it's not, like I said, it's not just a nonfiction book, but I mean, it's actually creative writing, and it doesn't come, it doesn't necessarily come naturally to people. You have to learn,
Yeah. So, I love all those old film noir types.
Yeah.
I just saw one called Mulholland Falls.
Oh, yeah. I'm planning to see that. Was that pretty good? That's like in L.A., right?
Yeah. It's cool. John Malkovich is in it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm so bad with actors' names. I'm such a mom.
Actually, I did see Mulholland Falls. That Nick Nolte was in it, right?
Yeah, Nick Nolte and what's
and
her name?
Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer Connelly. Yeah.
Right, I remember that now. That's a pretty good movie.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the name of the author who wrote Black Dahlia, L.A. Confidential.
Yeah, Robert Parker? No, that's the other guy.
I'm so bad. James. Ugh. Elroy, James Elroy.
Right.
Yeah, I read a couple of his books. I love them.
Yeah. I know. This is pretty cool. Do you love to read, too?
I'm a big fan of Us Weekly and Star when it's on. No, I do, actually. I usually read more nonfiction.
Right.
I've read a few more allegory type, fictional type stuff, but for the most part, more nonfiction.
Right.
Yeah,
that's cool stuff as well. I mean, sometimes I like fiction, sometimes I like nonfiction. I usually read like 3-4 books at a time, So
and how often? I mean, how quickly do you, finish?
I don't read that fast,
Yeah.
But I mean, a book, well, that's the thing is if I read 3 or 4 books, then it takes a while to finish all of them,
Yeah.
Or, even each one of them takes a while.
It's, I'll be honest with you. Yeah. Listen. There's groups of people that are into reading.
Right.
And
you're not
like,
one of them.
Well, it's not that I don't respect it and would love to be in the group so I can talk about my latest read.
Right.
I just got other stuff going on.
Exactly.
Kara's very relational. She reads people, so it's like, that's kind of you have a lot of emotional intelligence, a lot of
and you've got
so
a lot of energy
bookworm.
And stuff. You like to do things and
I'm like, who needs the alphabet, right?
Yeah, there
just
you go.
Deal with it. No, actually, I do read, but it's just not. I'm not one of these like. Our roommate's husband, he reads a book on a plane,
Really?
He'll read like a book a weekend.
They say that people with scientific minds take longer to read books because they're very detail oriented and they really go back and go over all the details. And so that's probably why we take so long to read a book, is because we're just so highly intelligent.
That's what I'm
assuming.
We're
and
very
what about the people
smart.
That just don't
that's
read?
Right.
the people that just don't pick up the book at all.
It's you already know it all, so why even bother
that's
reading?
Sad.
Exactly. Yeah, you're like really smart.
Yeah. It's like they made that book a movie. Just go see the movie.
All right, we're gonna take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to LA Talk Radio Channel 1. Call in 942.
Tiger Woods just made his apology. Do we want to listen to that?
You know, yes, I do, actually. Why not? I'm always like, why are people just bringing him so much attention? Play that footage, yeah. Sam.
Good morning, and thank you for joining me. Many of you in this room are my friends. Many in this room know me. Many of you have cheered for me, or you worked with me, or you supported me. Now, every one of you has good reason to be critical of me. I want to say to each of you, simply and directly, I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in. I know people want to find out how I could be so selfish and so foolish. People want to know how I could have done these things to my wife, Elin, and to my children. And while I have always tried to be a private person, there are some things I want to say. Elin and I have started the process of discussing the damage caused by my behavior. As Elin pointed out to me, my real apology to her will not come in the form of words. It will come from my behavior over time. We have a lot to discuss, and however, what we say to each other will remain between the two of us.
All right. Well, that's part of it. It goes on for about 14 minutes.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much what we expected, I think. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I just I heard them talk about this morning, and some people just didn't think that it was. It seemed a little too robotic.
Mm-hmm.
Was kind of some of the ideas that people had. They didn't think that he let a lot of his humanity share.
Yeah, he's not showing a lot of emotion, I think.
Yeah.
But he's not. I mean, he's a golfer. This is my whole beef with it. He's a golfer. He's not an actor or a public speaker. He just, you know, I'm sorry. I just don't know why everyone is so outraged by it, because I mean, I like Tiger Woods for his golfing ability. I don't need him to be a moral, right. You know.
You may not, Sarah, but Nike needs him to be moral because of his endorse. That's the, because I was on the same page as you. I'm like, relax. We got issues, people. Take him off the media. Like, but apparently, he's lost so many endorsement deals because.
Well, it all comes down to money then.
Yeah,
you know?
It does. Well, it does. So, because you can't publicly, apparently, you can't publicly take funds and then be a speaker publicly for a product or campaign and then privately want to retreat.
Well, here's my thing is that, you know, elections in Canada, we don't have these big, like events, publicity events where you see, you know, the prime minister's family and how he interacts with them and him giving them a puppy. And I mean, this is just crazy bullshit.
Yeah.
I don't need my prime minister to have the same moral values or ethics as me. I need him to be good at his job. I know lots of people that are great at their job. They're great leaders, great decision makers, you know, who've got, you know, some maybe immoral personal lives. But I'd rather that than someone, you know, that's hokey and down home, but you know, well, anyway, I don't want to name former presidents, but anyway.
But no, you don't want to go there. But no, I agree, actually, because I felt like when this hit the air, and I said this to you earlier, Sam, I was like, I just feel like there's a witch hunt. There's this, like, this real excitement about putting somebody in their place and being right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how many of these reporters and how many of the people on air and how many people that are interviewing and how many people that are attacking and going after him have sex addictions themselves or wish that they could have enough sex to have an addiction?
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
The fact is everyone has addictions. And the minute you point your finger at someone, you know, you got to look at yourself. And I just don't get why, you know, we need Tiger Woods to be, you know,
Well, I don't know that we necessarily need that, but I think just the story captures people's imagination, you know, because it's someone famous in the public eye, you know, and he's screwing up big time, you know.
I think it's a little crooked, you know. I was reading these transcripts of the text messages and all the phone conversations he had with these women, and I feel like it's voyeuristic. It's like it's like a sort of a weird, you know, and sort of twisted preoccupation, and it's stuff we shouldn't really, if we're concerned about, you know, keeping ourselves on a moral level. It's something, you know, no, the whole world doesn't need to read that.
Yeah.
You know,
well, the thing is, I don't know if it's about judging, you know, morality or anything. I think it's just, like, for example, I mean, I don't care what he does in his life. But I find the story to be fascinating.
So
you
bought the magazine, you know, Us Weekly with all the...
No, I did not buy that, but I'm kind of curious as to what's going on, you know?
See,
I mean,
Sam's being honest, because, I mean, we're all sitting here having a conversation about it, number one. Number two, I mean, a lot of people, some of them maybe aren't pointing the finger, but they're sure interested. The entertainment...
It's like a train wreck,
it's entertainment,
you know?
And it's sad, but it's true.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is that it's, you know, it's destructive. I just don't think that there's
any... Well, I totally agree with you on that.
It's sick fascination is what I think it is. You know, when you need to read his phone conversations with these women, I mean, you know, you got to just find out how bad he really was. I mean, that's hypocritical. Yeah. That's like the hypocrites, you know.
Well, what I thought was kind of gross from the media is they're giving these chicks their 15 minutes of fame, mm-hmm. and showing like clips of them in the shower and like...
Oh, yeah, they're laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
They're like, hey, my name's Bambi, number 532, option 8. And Tiger was with me one night. Yeah, we flirted, man. And he bought me champagne.
Oh, yeah, I can hear the book deals.
Yeah.
And then I saw this other chick was on, I think, Inside Edition or something. I just like, I don't watch TV, you have to understand, but sometimes I just have it on and I catch a couple of things. So they were showing actually one of the girls. And she's like, I'm so hurt, and blah, 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 and I wish he would have, you know, and he owes an apology.
Was this the one with the abortions?
I don't know. I don't know what she is.
This one chick was same thing. She's like, I've had 2 abortions because of Tiger. And she was playing the role like, I had a loss, and I'm so hurt, and I'm so hurt. And I thought, what do you do about it now? Why now are you speaking up? Because there's 15 other girls. You guys were really victimized by the pro athlete who you know, took you in his limo, and you guys were really victimized.
Yeah, and it's like they didn't. Yeah, like they didn't know he was married, right?
Oh, please.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that kind of behavior. So then to ask for sympathy is, but that's what I'm saying again. It's like a train wreck, you know. You know, people liking, you know, watching this shit, you know?
Yeah, well, Kara, I mean, she loves her Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
I'm not gonna lie,
Girls Next Door.
I don't watch Girls Next Door, really.
No.
They got a new cast this year. It's not that great.
I think my brain is atrophied from her.
But, you know, don't get all pious either, because the reality is that, you know what, you and I use a lot of pop culture in our comedy. I mean, you get it from somewhere. We use it. We spoof it. We fuels our cause. We make up characters, you know. So at the same time, it's like, you know, let's not get all high-horsed here, because I like, you know, we all like a good story.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, I know a lot of people, my friends, that love to tune into reality shows because it makes them feel better about themselves, and it makes them feel like they're making the right decisions in life and doing so much better than these pathetic people. And I think that's kind of funny, but you know,
And she's trying to say that about me. You know what?
No, I didn't say that about you.
She's like, I know people sitting right next to me who, you know, gives them something to look forward to. Their stories. No, I actually don't. I don't like sit there all the time and watch. But I do tune in. I do think some of it's fun, and there is something fascinating about watching someone else's life.
Yeah,
it's why is reality TV such a hit? It's not only the extremity of it, but it's also the fact that you're getting to peer into someone else's life, and like you're a fly on the wall. And there's something about that concept that is really, really interesting.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, to see people behave like not the way they would behave in public. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll admit it, and I'll own it, and I'll use it in my comedy.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
There you go. So how's the dating life in L.A.? I mean, what... you're straight, right?
Pardon?
Are you straight? No, I don't know. I have to make sure.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'm straight.
Okay, so you're after men.
I am.
Yes. And so what's the picture of men in L.A. for you?
I think the best way to attract a man in LA is to wear a big mirror so that they can just look at themselves all night.
Really? Is that what you noticed?
So true. It's really true.
Are they like full of themselves and stuff here?
there's just a lack of connection, you know. Mm-hmm. I sort of sit down and listen to their hype and hype themselves up all night and talk about
really?
You know, themselves. And then there's not a lot of drawing out.
And you can say that about most guys?
No, I mean, I'm obviously really generalizing, right. but I've met a lot of great
like
guys
like you have been
here.
All morning about Canadians.
Stereotypes are fun.
Yeah, they are.
That's what we've learned.
Somebody told me last night, you know, it's really hard to judge when you don't know. I said, actually, it's really easy. It makes it more
That's
fun,
true.
Too. It's easy and fun. Mm.
Yeah, no, I've been on a few dates, and for the most part, you know, the guy's been pretty cool, but no love connections yet.
No love connections.
But
I just think what she's saying, and I notice this is a lot, is that there's such extreme narcissism here because people are moving out here for careers and,
right.
and their dreams. So it becomes very self-focused to a point where people don't know how to unplug from the hype and always keeping the business going. Mm. So sometimes they don't know how to have a give and take conversation.
Yeah.
It's right. like, yeah, so, and you remember the other night we went out with that dude that, let's not name his name, but we went out with this guy who's, you know, he's got a deal with FX and he's got some cool shows coming up. And, you know, you could tell he's a fun guy, but he didn't know how to unplug and just relax and engage. It was like, you know, I'm out here and I'm doing this stuff and I'm at the Blue Boy Mansion, you know, and I'm having my drinks and, you know, they trying to stop partying and I'll just keep going to Tuesday, you know. And I was like, oh, cool. You party a lot and you got addictions. Awesome. You know, but it's like it's like kind of relax, right? Just relax and engage.
Yeah. There's no kind of self-awareness in that regard. It's just like, you know.
Yeah. So you're finding... Well, I guess L.A. men are not like all American men and stuff, you know. So, but Canadian men are probably different, right?
Yeah, I mean, again,
boring.
To generalize.
Yeah,
they're
let's generalize.
Boring.
What the hell? Have you met any?
Well, they're looking like princes to me now because
well, that's
my
true. When I go back to Texas, I used to like not be into the guys there, and I go back and I'm like, oh, okay, I can do this. I can do. I can do a redneck. no pun intended. But no, anyway, I'm into this. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeehaw, throw me in the back of the truck. Let's do it.
No, exactly. You know, I think there's great guys everywhere. And Canadian guys, okay, well, you know, Michael Cera, he's a famous Canadian actor down here. That's kind of a good, you know, stereotype of...
He's like a child, though. Is he?
Well,
like,
he's a child. Yet? No, I know. But I'm just saying it's that sort of like, oh, whatever you say, kind of, okay, no confrontation, no conflict.
I'm so over lack of menness. Like the whole, like, quirky indie guy with the glasses, and he's like...
well, Kara tells me all the time that if you're not rocking back hair and you got an ox named Blue,
if you don't have a freaking an axe in your hand
and an ox named Blue and some back hair and a nice
if your last name doesn't if your last name isn't, you know, Onion and starts with a B,
then move it along.
That's so not true. I don't like back hair. I don't like it. But what I'm trying to say for those of you that aren't getting the metaphor and taking Sarah seriously,
she wants to be thrown over your shoulder.
I just want to be with a man that's 100% male. I want to be the 100% male. I don't want to be a guy. I don't want to be the guy.
Where?
Listen.
Okay.
We're not going to name names here.
Okay.
I'm going to do this actually better. I can't. Okay. I don't want to be the guy that is like, oh, don't touch me there. You're going to mess this up. Or you're going to, you know,
well,
fix my hair. Or you're going to get... oil on me, your skin. Do you know what I'm, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I can't do it. I need somebody
oil
that's like...
oil on my skin.
Like, I just... I know guys that
you
are
want
like,
someone that's sensual.
Yeah, and I want somebody that's very masculine. Like, for example, unfortunately, he's married with a baby on the way, or already has a baby, but, you know, whatever. Josh Holloway from Lost. You guys know that character? He's like a real-life Tarzan on the TV show Lost.
Uh-huh.
He's thick. He's meaty. He's
beefy. Wild.
He's wild. He's very, very rebellious. He's kind of got like a sandy blonde hair. It's like almost his shoulders. It's layered. He has a great tan. But he's just like, he's like, oh, you
see,
know?
And I prefer more of an intellectual kind.
The guy that's got muscles and can actually defend you doesn't have any brain cells is what you're saying?
Here's the thing, Kara. We're not living in caveman days. I don't need him to like...
You're living in L.A., and it would be nice for somebody to be able to defend you one night when you're walking home from your car.
It would also be nice for someone, you know, to be able to carry on a conversation.
But can't you have both?
I don't know if you can.
She hasn't found
one
it
or
yet.
The other.
Yeah, I just would rather, you know, honestly, I think I have great girlfriends. I mean, if I had to choose, okay, hypothetically, I have such great girlfriends with great conversations and great friends. If I had to choose between a guy that's like really heady and intellectual with his little intellectual glasses and, you know, really stimulating conversation.
The pen is mightier than the sword.
Whatever. Or dealing with a man that's, like, got beefiness and he's very manly and just that whole, like, two opposites of a magnet type thing. I'd rather go with that and then get my, you know, my intellectual fix if I had to choose with my girlfriends.
Right.
Instead of freaking, you want to have sex with a guy that's like half your size, and like you really want to have, you know, be intimate with a guy that's like your brother, or like he's like little sidekick friend.
I just think attraction is deeper for
me. No, it's not. It's one way and it's my way or the highway. It's my way or the highway.
So you like him beefy and manly and
I do.
On the back.
No hair. The reality is I like the idea of, and I actually don't like chauvinist guys or anything. I just like them to be almost chauvinist. I just like a man that embraces being a man and masculine. Right. We live in a city that men are very emasculated.
Really?
Yeah, very, very much so. And so I play around going to the extreme with it because, you know, it's like the redneck does start to look good after a while. You're like, man, at least, you know, you
he's
crave
over himself.
Yeah, he's not looking in the mirror as long as you are. He's not picking
up. No, I don't want that. I mean, I dated a guy once that had such, you know, amazing pores that I couldn't stop staring at his fabulous skin. And he was so pretty. And I was like, no, I'm the pretty one here.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty.
But I have dated shorter men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how does that go? That doesn't look right,
short
right?
Short guys work harder. They
yeah,
work
that's
harder.
True. But
and they got snap.
Yeah.
And you know what? I blow their mind. I'm just 6'2", and it's overwhelming, and they love it. And
let me tell you about Sarah,
sure,
though. All this woman, right? Okay. Here's the thing. Sarah, I always say Sarah looks rich because she's almost not human, her height. And rich short men, they want to harpoon her.
Well, I get a lot of Eastern European guys, you know, that
they want to
look
home
at me like rare and exotic species. And they want to, you know, they want to harness her, and they want to put me in cage, you know, and have me like, you know, on display. I was
sounds
literally
sexy.
Told, yeah,
really?
By this one guy, and I love it. It's like, it's so, you know, Neanderthal, like, you know, the way guys pick you up in LA. Mm. They come up to you and they go, you know, hello, I make, you know, six figure, I
really,
you know, I fly jumbo jets, I you put you in hotel, we go travel, you like, you know. It's
Sarah, though. Tell me about your birthday and that dude that we met. We had the best time on her birthday, but
yeah, I met this guy named Stefanos.
Doesn't matter.
I don't think he tunes into LA Talk because I think his vocabulary is
even
a little
if
more
he
limited.
Does, it's fine.
But anyway, if he does, it's cool. He was really fun and nice.
He bought us drinks all night.
But he let me know that I'd be a great asset to him because, you know, it's better to have a tall woman. It looks better. It's more striking. So
really? But he told her. He straight up told her, and she was like, she broke it down for him. She's like, look, Stefano, I think you're cool, would love to hang, but not really looking in the same direction. He's like, you know, that is great. I still see future with you in arm and look great with me in public and make me look like powerful rich man.
Yeah,
right?
I could be such a gold digger.
Oh, my gosh, Sarah.
Man.
Do it for us. No, I've had a couple of opportunities
myself.
So you
can get one extra room, you know?
I just think it's so funny, you know, even watching, speaking of reality shows, Million Dollar Matchmaker, you know, that show.
Millionaire Match.
Millionaire Match, sorry, we got the expert over here.
Patty Sternberger.
No. And just, you know, how they kind of, you know, it's still kind of this arranged marriage almost feel where it's like, okay, we've got some good genes, we've got no history of mental illness.
Is like on the first date?
Yeah.
She profiles. She profiles, and it's like, you know, whittle it down, get it all looking good on paper, and then, you know, make it work.
Mm.
So, you know, people, it's like a lack of humanity almost. Like, it's not human anymore. It's all about, you know,
calculated
how much,
and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm.
Wow. It's funny. You know, personally, like the spiritual thing, God will. I am such, by nature, I'm such a beasty, awful person because I'm such a. I would go after all the bad stuff if I could, but God always shuts it down. I mean, that's getting a little. He does. He shuts it down. He's like, no, Kara, you're not. I always feel like I've got. Jesus has me in a headlock, and he's like, put it down, Kara. Fine, you win, creator of universe again. But, you know, what I feel like is I've had a couple opportunities where, you know, it's, I think every woman in LA has, where there's an opportunity to have like an easy ride or whatever, just, you know, show up, look pretty and don't talk too much and, you know, be that girl. I have looked down that road long and hard. And I'm like, you know, it'd be nice to have.
To be a kept woman.
It'd be nice to kind of have my tags on my car not expired.
Yeah. You see, I figure, you know, if I were a woman, look, you're going to find a guy eventually, you know, so why not find one with money? You know, I mean, the thing
oh
is,
Sam, it doesn't, I love Sam.
No,
like
it doesn't
Monroe
have to be
from Gentlemen Prefer Blonde.
Well, what I'm saying, yeah, well, I'm not saying settle for a guy you don't like,
right.
But if you know, you might as well find one who's got money. I mean, why live
one of my
poor?
Greatest dissatisfactions in life is the fact that the world's income, only 5% of that goes to women.
Right.
And I'm not saying I'm a raging feminist or anything, but it bothers me that, you know, women are oftentimes elbowed out of every industry, especially the entertainment industry. It's like we're really, you know, I've realized that it is a much bigger challenge. It takes us twice as long to get half as far in every industry. And I would never be okay with sort of, you know, giving up my dreams and my work dreams to.
Right. I think he's saying if the option
drift
were there.
Right.
See, I'm staring it back towards, hey, but if you could.
I need someone that's really comfortable in their skin and they're not going to get stressed out if I make more money than them or whatever.
Right. Yeah, and
So you don't care about the money when you meet a guy and stuff, right?
It's not even about the money. It's about character. So if they're freeloaders, no, that's a huge turnoff.
Right.
But if they've got the, you know, the ambition or the, you know, ability to... you know, work hard, that's what I look for. I don't need them to be millionaires, though.
I'd actually agree with her. It seems like, you know, if somebody just has ambition and dream, I mean, how can I really fault them for being in a developmental stage of their
especially
life
when I am,
when I'm still going after the goal. But I will say this. I mean, if God will let me get there, I've dated a lot of guys that are busted, you know, broke, really funny and talented, though, just gems, salt of the earth people they are. You know, guys with a lot of just, oh, man, they're the life of the party. But, you know, when the tab comes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
it's not difficult to make a decent income and be organized and be able to, you know.
Well, it depends. But I think it's not, I don't think it's too high of a standard to be like, hey.
Yeah, responsible. They need to be responsible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would like, I kind of, you know, I've paid my dues, literally, and I've really dated a lot of guys that are from humble means, and, you know, I don't regret it, and they're great people, but it would be nice to kind of be with a dude that can
and this is where I really just think, you know, there's the CEO does not marry the cleaning lady, okay?
Yeah.
And there's no free rides, and in every marriage I've ever seen, you know, when the guy makes a drastically bigger income than her, it's held against you. It's held against you at a certain point. And
really?
Yeah, yeah. Right. And the man ends up resenting.
There.
Yeah, there's a resentment. And
power.
I've seen it happen too many times, and I don't ever want to be in a place where, you know, someone feels like I'm not pulling my weight or...
Right.
Or, you know, it just doesn't, I'm sorry, it just doesn't work out that way.
Yeah,
you know, people
yeah.
marry into certain positions and it's kind of
But, you know, just to play devil's advocate, because that's what I do, even though I do agree with you, like, you know, develop who you are
Listen,
first.
Listen, that woman that married Donald Trump, I don't even know her name. What's the new one?
Who knows?
Anyway, the point is
model
she
number three,
she doesn't keep that ass tight. She doesn't keep those boobs up and that tan popping. You'll be trading her in for the newest model.
Yeah, but here's the thing. But a lot of these people, though, Sarah, a lot of these people... It's been said too that women that are successful, adversely, men, you know, you've got your own struggles when it comes to, you know, you say, oh, the rich man doesn't go for the cleaning lady. Okay. But he doesn't necessarily go for the millionaire either. That's its own issue too.
I don't know.
No, it's true. Actually, it's almost like competitive. It's almost like you bring so much to the table now. You don't look like the quote unquote damsel in distress. You don't look like somebody that he needs to rescue. And whether you resent it or don't agree with it or whatever, it's a reality in some ways for people. And I'm not, you know, I'm not,
that's why you need to be with someone really
who's on your level,
with character,
who matches you.
Well, and also gets that money's not you know, your identity or
sure
you know,
isn't.
Yeah,
career isn't.
So
many people that are...
Men with money, they expect beauty, you know? I mean, they don't expect the woman to have money, so if she's the maid or the cleaning lady, you know, if she's hot, then I think that's good enough for them. You know, that's
but
the trade-off.
But it's not
really
good enough for them because even
it
the,
isn't.
Because then he's on to the next and he's on to the next and he's got the wife and
he never gets, you know.
He's never filled. He's never happy.
Yeah.
And it's never enough. And she's not really human. She's a decoration that.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? Like a trophy.
Yeah. And then.
But
you know.
That's what happens. I mean,
that's
you know, I'm not
just,
saying that's
yeah.
the ideal, but that's mm-hmm. what happens. You know, it's sort of like a trade-off, you know.
Yeah.
I
well,
give
I
you the
like,
money
yeah.
and, you know.
And a lot of times these guys, they're not even interested in the woman. I mean, their career
right.
and their image is everything. So it's about competing with other men. And so
right.
it's who's got the hottest wife
exactly.
or whatever. It's not
exactly.
even about the woman. She's just kind of like, you know, sitting around on the sidelines, making her money, and then they move
and
on.
And don't get it twisted. I mean, out in L.A., it's a business decision for women to
yeah.
marry. I know women women that don't really know them, but I know of them that marrying is a business decision because people go, oh, signing a prenup. No, a lot of those prenups are loaded to where they're getting paid for X amount of years that they're married, and then after that, if they divorce, they're getting paid. I mean, there's just it's a financial decision.
Right.
And a lot of these marriages that we see in Hollywood that we talk about, you know, there's a lot of contractual agreements where they're, you know, we see it as cheating when really they may have an open relationship and it's in their contract.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, I'm just saying that it's kind of just being tarnished and it's taken on so many financial, you know, business sides to it that it's, you know, it is kind of like what you're saying. You do this, I do this, boom, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, at the end of the day, I think, you know, what we think is going to fill people, it doesn't fill people.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So
when was the last relationship you had?
I actually haven't had a really serious relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm very aware of
hard to find people.
Yeah, I guess so. Mm. I mean, I'm really happy single, and I've dated, you know, a bit, but I'm really clear on what I want, and I'm a Christian, so it kind
right.
of changes my game because it's like I'm really looking to play for keeps, and
that's true.
Yeah, and we, yeah. you know, you're looking.
So you guys
to
are similar
one.
That way, right? You're waiting to have sex until after you get married. Is
yeah,
that
I might as well come out of the closet with that one.
Well, like I said to you, I'm kind of like the skanky version of the Christian walk.
Don't say that.
I already did. Too late. But no, we share the same views, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, Christians believe that sex is life-giving. So
right.
we don't think there's anything wrong with it. We just believe in using it in life-giving ways.
Right.
And, you know, sex is like, it's basically your commitment or your commitment mechanism. So it's like if you, you know, start just committing to all these different people, it really messes you up psychologically, emotionally. There's a disconnect, and because that's not what it was designed for. It was really designed to bond you to another person.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's what I believe. It's totally unpopular.
Extremely.
But it's great. If I
yeah.
need to get out of a bad date, I just go, you know,
I'm a Christian.
Here's where, yeah,
I've had a guy,
you're not going to want to date me, okay?
Yeah, I had a guy once I told him on a date that, you know, it wasn't going to go down that way.
Yeah.
He got straight up and walked out. He didn't even say bye. He didn't say, oh, okay, well, you know what? I got to go check something in my car. He goes, okay.
Yeah.
Stood up.
Yeah.
Walked. I said, well, that was quick.
Yeah.
That was quick.
That didn't take a lot of effort.
No, and
huh?
it saved me time, but it was just like,
that's
so
the
rude.
Best way to get out of it.
Yeah.
You just say, you know, I'm abstinent, and I really believe in waiting. So you put that ring on my finger.
Then
right.
like it, then you should have put a ring on it.
Like, this is the face of commitment.
yeah, that'll scare a person.
That'll scare them. So,
yeah.
You know, you really, and it's funny because they'll always try to, like, pretend like they're so, you know, they'll be like, oh, no, it's not an issue for me. Of course that's not an issue for me. Of course it's not.
So you're saying even the guy you decide you're going to marry, you're not going to have sex with him until after the marriage?
Yeah, well,
really?
That's the plan. You know,
so,
I'm not.
Yeah. So you never had sex?
No.
Really?
No.
Wow.
I don't feel like I've missed out either. Everyone's
really?
Like, what? What?
Yeah.
What?
And well, you don't know what you missed out because you never really tried it, you know, but
yeah.
But I'm not judging you.
I think it's
very cool. But at the same time, I do think you miss out on a lot, you know, and you know, what can I say? Because some people feel that you can separate love and sex. You know, they don't have to. I mean, yes, it helps people bond and so forth, but it's not the only way that you can use it. You
like
know, I mean,
just
it's
friction
a way,
or whatever,
or for adults to play. It's just adult play. You know.
Yeah, I think it's like we also find our social identity in sexuality. I think it's a way of finding social identity. You know.
Yeah.
And personal identity.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
True.
Yeah, yeah.
I see
but
that.
My question is this, is that, I mean, you'd commit to someone for the rest of your life and you don't even know if you're sexually compatible.
I don't believe in the whole sexual compatible thing. I think, you know, you got a lot of time to work on it. And I think, you know, sexuality works best when you're only concerned about the other person. And you put their, you know, their enjoyment first.
Right.
You can't lose.
Well, yeah, you can do that without a relationship, though. That's what I mean, you know. And
I love Sam. Sam's just like, yeah. But no, seriously.
Yeah, sex as appetite. It was a very, you know, back in the, you know, Greek, you know, in Greek history, that was very a common accepted viewpoint is that, you know, it's you're hungry, you eat food, you feel sexy, you have sex, and it's
right.
It's just an appetite, another appetite. Whereas I believe that sex is more has more wonder and has more of a spiritual and emotional, you know, it's much more elevated.
But how would you know? You never had sex. I mean, how would
you
know
all these
things?
I know how I feel about it. I mean, I've had, you know, sexual, you know,
desires.
Sure. Yeah. Right. I mean, I know my sexuality because, you know, I've
crunches.
Pardon?
Crunches?
Oh, don't even.
Okay,
no. Okay. Too far. No.
There's no too far of this show.
It's funny. No. Don't
all right. Well, Kara's referring to the fact that.
Sarah, so this is like, what kind of show is that? It's real. There
no,
is honest.
I can.
You don't
talk.
Don't tell him if you don't want to.
Yeah, you don't have to say anything you don't want to. Although it would be nice. No, it's okay.
I think she's gonna kill me.
I am, because we had some off topics. We agreed there was some off.
Then don't
topics.
Say it. Don't
that's
say it.
Okay.
That's
we don't talk about that. But my question is though, I mean, but what about when you get into a relationship?
Uh-huh.
Let's say you fell in love with a guy.
Uh-huh.
But you're not married. Right?
Okay.
You can still use it as a bonding experience and so forth, right?
Well, there's always one person that's more committed than the other, and that's wanting. Women give sex to get love.
Right.
That's
men
what we do.
Give love to give sex to get sex.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
You know, I mean,
from somebody that has had it.
Here's
but
the thing. Oh.
But it's only true so far because I can tell you that. I know of many women that are very sexual,
women have sexual appetites, but they will sexuality, you know, you read Shakespeare, Shakespeare, he would always talk about like the stage direction would be the woman grants him a kiss. So, women give sexuality.
They're the gatekeepers.
Love.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they, it's their choice to gift.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So the point is that, men need to seek out and sort of pursue a woman, and then the woman is the vulnerable one that sort of opens herself up.
Right.
So that's like a very, you know, women are very sexual, of course.
I say this. I always say this when I'm explaining it to somebody that just doesn't get it.
But we have sex and emotion.
I said, women can be just as horny as a man where she's like,
but it's
just
emotional too.
Well, hold on. From somebody that's had it, all I'm saying is women can be just as carnal and very, you know, physical as a man. But what happens, even if she doesn't want it to, even if she tries to compartmentalize, and I know girls that have tried to feed me that line for the longest time, and down the road they admit it, it's like something happens behind the scenes emotionally for them, whether they like it or not, whether they try to stop it or not, it happens.
Right.
And there's something, a part of you that you've given to that person that you can't take back.
Mm-mm.
And I've experienced it where it's like, no, this is just fun, this is just whatever, but it doesn't, it never stays in its place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, men, maybe they're better at that than women.
Men are better at that.
But the reality is it in, or, you know, to be honest with you, women go into something, maybe it is a selfish motive and they just want to, you know, get off, and the man does get some kind of attachment. I mean, so my point is this isn't clean and pretty and everything's in its place. And people try to feed you that. They try to say, it's fine. But it, for one person, whether it's initially or down the line, it doesn't stay that way. It just doesn't. And I right. know people that, Sam, just from the same, women from the same school of thought trying to feed me, no, you know, I'm going to get my stuff on and I'm just, you know, this is who I am. And it fizzles out. It fizzles out. And there's, mm-hmm.
And a man goes around sleeping with a bunch of women. He's a stud. A woman does that. She's a slut. Right. So, you know, it's different for men and women.
Yeah, not so much anymore, though. You know, I mean, there's women that pride themselves in their sexuality and,
but how do
and
men
they
see
do
them?
It and,
yeah.
What's that?
How's I mean, what do you mean by priding them? Like,
how do you see the Sex and the
City
women?
No, I mean, I think that men love it. You know, I mean, a healthy man that's not threatened.
Yeah.
No, by all the amount of partners she's had, he loves the fact that she's had a lot of partners.
No, you don't have to love it, but at the same time, you don't really judge them. I mean, you just take it as the way they are today is the sum of everything that they've done. You know, so if they've got more experience and they're more attentive to you and all that stuff, you see. You can't immediately assume that the person's only going to be into themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Because many people are not, you know? They're into, I mean, myself, I'm into the pleasure of the other person, you know? And,
oh,
but,
yeah.
But I would do that even if I wasn't married to them.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what I'm saying. But, I mean, look, I totally understand. It's just that it's hard
it's
to grasp in today's... Yeah.
It's very
in today's
countercultural,
culture,
especially
it's,
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know...
What were you? I was gonna add something to that. Oh no, I forget. Oh, it's morning. It's
so,
morning.
But you have had long-term relationships and stuff.
I've had like more friendships, and I've dated a bunch.
Right.
But
I bet no guy would want to date you if you don't provide sex after a while.
Well,
right?
That's what I'm trying to
Thanks,
tell you, Sam.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's a real no. It separates the wheat from the chaff, the men from the boys. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's like you know, it really you know, you find out where you stand. So that's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
You know, because
well, you know, she's not looking for a bunch.
I'm not looking
she's
for casual relationships.
One, so.
That's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, you can have one and not be married to them. You know?
I think also you're saying, okay, this is what I was going to say, because, you know, you're talking about, you know, sexual compatibility and people being really skilled and, you know, there are techniques and there are special tongue techniques and all the rest of
no,
it.
No, that's not necessarily what I was
yeah.
talking about, but
oh,
go
okay,
ahead.
Oh, he's talking about chemistry.
Go ahead.
Okay, well,
no.
this is something that, you know, is out there
right.
and it's all about being good in bed. Are you, how hot are you? Are you
yeah.
good in bed?
Right.
And I'm just like, something has like gone off. I dated this one guy and he was like breaking down my body into like, these are good. This needs work. This is okay. I'm like,
whoa.
Where is your sensuality? I'm
yeah.
like, you know, there's something really wrong when a guy's like, oh, your boobies. I need them to be a little more round on the sides so that I can get turned on. I need your, you know, your fanny to be a certain
Well, obviously,
thing.
A guy like this, you don't waste any time with, you know.
But, exactly.
But most guys I know would not say that. You know?
Well,
yeah.
not like
that.
I'm like, you get in, you get great, you're grateful. That's what you get.
Just be happy you're in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Be happy you're in the game.
So how did you get to that point of view? I mean, did you grow up in a strict environment? Because Kira said she didn't. I mean, she or
no.
she wasn't. You weren't.
No, I was introduced to it, but there was, you know, I was kind of figure it out on your own. Like, figure out where you're gonna get lunch money first, and then.
Guys, we got a phone call. Let's see who that is.
Oh, cool. This is exciting.
Yeah. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, Sam. This is Mario, Sarah, and Kara.
Hi,
you're
Mario.
You're both single, right?
We're single, Mario. Are you?
Yes, I am. But I was married. I didn't want to be married, but. When I was on the road with my band, I told my band members, you guys can play around. That's fine with me. I am disabled. I write my songs. I sang my songs. Mm-hmm. In 2000, I became paralyzed. There was a nurse that I thought was a rugrat that followed our band at every concert we did.
Uh-huh.
I chose not to be married.
Right.
But when I went down, she was there from the time I went down until my wife and my daughter died. So what I'm telling you two girls is follow your heart and your soul, and the man will come to you if he really loves you.
Oh, thank you, Mario. That is such a...
So sweet.
Wow, that's...
Amen.
Really,
that's really touching.
Yeah. No, but...
And the way Sam met his wife, that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
They're happily married.
And that is love at first sight.
Yeah, mm-hmm. more or less.
When he first met her.
Yeah. I don't know if it's but love, but it women, is at first sight.
But with you women, it's got to follow your heart and soul.
Right.
Because if you don't do it that way, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
When
you're
I
right.
married my wife, she was pregnant with my daughter. Mm-hmm. And when she was about to conceive or deliver the child, they found a blood disease. I had to get a priest in the room, marry her, and have my child and my wife in my arms.
Wow.
And they both died in my arms.
Wow. Yeah, Mario, you've had one of the toughest lives I've ever known. And
Sam.
What's that?
Damn right.
Yeah, yeah. But you still managed to get through it. That's why, I mean, to me, you're a hero. I mean, you're one of the strongest men I've ever known to survive all these things. And you know, he's sick and all that stuff. And obviously, he's been through a lot.
Sam, and, yeah, wow, Mario, thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hell yeah. And I'm dealing with my dying father, and that was a hard talk I had with him last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I hope he goes in peace. Because what you said about being a hero, I laid bad on him last night. And I had to hang up the phone because we both sat here and cried.
Wow. Yeah.
And that is the toughest thing, because being handicapped, they could have did away with me, but unconditional love brought us all together.
There you go. There you go.
Wow.
Well, you're just reinforcing what they're saying, I guess. So, cool, Mario.
Thank you.
And
that's it.
Yeah. And get better, Mario, please. Feel good.
I'm planning to come down to San Diego there, Sam.
Sounds
when
good,
when this
man.
Is all said and done.
Yeah.
Have
Sounds
fun.
Good, Mario. All right. Then thanks so much for listening, my man, and for being in touch.
You bet.
Okay. We
Bye,
love
you. Care, guys.
We love you.
Bye.
Take care.
Be good.
Bye. Mario is a friend of the station, and and everything he says is true. You know, I mean, he's been through a lot, and then he's been through an accident, and now he's handicapped and stuff. So, I mean, when you just hear his life, you go, God, you know, how can anybody survive this, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, but anyway, going back to sex now.
And on a better note.
So, all right, well, I think we got your view and stuff. So you guys are both, you both share these views, which is pretty cool, I think. So you find you have a lot in common and stuff.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we do. I mean, for a lot of, we have enough not in common to have a great friendship to where we can get our little arguments in. And
oh, yeah.
So now, what do you do? I mean, are you ever, like, sexually attracted to a man?
Well, see, as I've expressed, I've been there. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't have a lot of mileage, but I took the car out for a spin.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? And I've tasted the forbidden fruit to know that I really like it.
Mm.
It's amazing. It's such an awesome gift. And I really, you know, it's not an easy walk
but you
for
can,
me.
But you can turn it off on command.
You know what I find? It's all conditioning. It's like an appetite. It's like you have to, and it's going to sound severe, but it's true. You actually have to starve it for it to be dormant. And it says, even the Bible, don't awaken love. Do not arouse love before it's time. Like, don't awaken it, because it is such a God made it powerful. It is powerful. It is so awesome that when you start, you know, messing around with it, it's so hard to not engage it and that appetite. And honestly, you know, I've gone years and years without sex, and then I've, you know, dipped in a bit. And then trying to shut that door down, like, I'm kind of in the process of trying to shut it down again, and I'm doing pretty good, actually. But you get a certain months or a certain amount of time in, and you start getting really itchy, and you're like, you start, you know, you start rub, you know, just going into, you're just like in, you know, public crowds, and you kind of bump into somebody. You're like, hey, watch out, you know. There's definitely a process to it, and it goes into conditioning your mind and what you feed your brain and what you look at. And I definitely find that when I'm really on the straight and narrow with it, I have to shut certain things down in my life. Like,
I can't
look at certain stuff. I can't, you know, I have to really replace thoughts, you know, and it's but it's doable. I mean, you know, no pun intended. It's you can get there, but it takes commitment, it takes work, and it takes ultimately God's work in your life, because it's, you know,
Amen. Well, hallelujah.
Like, even there when you're married, right? It's like you still find other women attractive.
Exactly.
Right?
And you have to turn that part off.
You have to exercise restraint, and you have to do thought replacement, right? You have to work on it. And I believe replacing it with God, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nothing's easy, but anything that's worth anything great takes a level of sacrifice. So,
yeah. I don't know that I'd wait 28, 30 years for it, but... No, that's me.
Well, there's that's other me. Areas that I like have issues with. Like, okay, I'm not a big girl at all, but I don't know. I can't food. I'm like, that's where I go. That's my vice is totally food. And I love it. I mean, food is great, but it can get to a point where I'm like, you know, okay, Sarah, you're out of control. You just ate a whole bag of Ruffles and a Hostess, you know, Sarah Lee cake. You know, it's time to scale back a little. So I get what it is to feel like, whoa, this is out of control. And
I just find it's a place of where I have to depend on God, because especially, I mean, everybody's built differently, and I've heard people say, oh, you're just very sexual. And I'm just like, I think humans are made to be sexual.
Right.
I mean, I think that if you really open that door, everybody has the ability.
Yeah,
that's
our essence.
I don't believe in repression.
You know? Yeah.
That's another issue is that I have. You know, culturally, we're really a repressed society, and you know, it's like sex becomes a dirty thing. Everyone's like, ooh, sex, it's dirty. Can't say it. You know, it's this kind of repressed mentality, and I don't believe in that.
But that's
either.
What makes it like. You know, like the forbidden fruit, you know?
Yeah. But the only thing with the forbidden fruit thing, and I've experienced this, is like, you know, when that fruit is no longer forbidden,
mm-hmm.
are you still going to want that fruit?
Absolutely.
And, well, good. Well, then you and your wife are doing great. But I'm saying, you know, I'm going back to conditioning. If anything, right. it's like, if it's always like, oh, you want it because it's bad and wrong and dirty.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
when you actually get it
married.
All the time and it's available and that person's there, it's, you know, and this studies have shown, it's like, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, you've got different hurdles now because
your sexuality is attached to
the
you know the stranger and like not knowing the other person and the drama of figuring out another
person. Or the complications
That's
of it.
Right.
The complications, you know.
Yeah.
But
you're just too romantic. Yeah.
Well,
what can I say?
I don't know. It's even hard for me to talk about it like this because I'm trying to shut it down and I'm like, oh, the road ahead. You know, when you've been walking on that road for a long time, it becomes second nature. But when you're trying to go back onto that road, you're like, oh, this is, you know, let's just go on a walk or let's go to Disney World or something. You know, I just can't. I don't even want to think about it. I don't even want to think about it. I'm already depressed. I'm like, thanks, Sam. I don't want to think about it.
Don't worry. We'll do some decoupage when we get back to the house.
We'll do some scrapbooking.
Make some wicker baskets. They all end up looking like, you know, like sexual positions. Everything's, you know, bananas. And
it's something I have to pray about, man.
Okay.
It's one of those things. Okay, we'll get you back.
No,
I'm just telling you, I'm like, I'm getting itchy thinking about it. I'm like, I'm shifting my seat right now. I'm like,
No, but your husband's going to be lucky, man. You're not going to be starving him anytime soon. And she's an amazing cook, so I'm just putting a little plug for her.
Thanks, guys.
You want a woman of God
so
that
it's time to start finding a husband for you.
Well, you know, I actually, you know, my experience was I was kind of opening the door for that and going on a lot of dates thinking, you know what, it's time. I thought I was like telling God, this is time. It's time to land a man.
Right.
And went on some fun dates, met some great people, and I was dating somebody up until recently, and he's a great guy, but I just really saw that if the timing isn't right and it's not in God's timing, even if you meet the right person,
right,
it's not going to fill you, and it's really not going to be it's really just not going to be what you thought it was.
Mm.
And so I'm kind of, you know, I'm happy about just going after the things that are in my life right now and the doors that are opening for me, and realizing that, you know, what I thought I was going to find in that other person, and I met a really amazing guy, I didn't find it. I actually, you know, I don't know if I told you, I just totally broke up with him.
No,
I broke up.
I didn't know you were going out with him. I thought.
Well, we were dating, and it was exclusive for a while, and then I went from being exclusive to, you know what, we should date other people, or not really date other people, but just, you know, just date.
Dating in?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Too late anyway. Too late. Whatever.
Whatever. Yeah.
I'm bearing all my.
You're info. Oprah, man.
I'm
gonna be. Everything's gonna be right out there.
Oprah's book club. But no, I started realizing that he's an amazing guy. Just the timing and everything just wasn't right, and it was better off us doing our own thing. And
really.
And I was like, you know, I met a really great guy, and the timing wasn't great. So I don't really know if I'm on the hunt to meet another great guy, because it all kind of ends up, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand. I mean, you know, because the thing is, you can say I'm not ready, the timing's not right. But I think if you meet the right guy, the one that you feel you want to spend the rest of your life with,
mm-hmm. you make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that's true.
You don't let them go, you
but
know?
At the same time, it was like, you know, when you're looking to make that big decision, I'm sure right. your criteria for women was different than when you, you know, you met your wife and you were like, okay, this is someone right. I can see myself partnering with and settling down with.
Yeah. Actually, no, she was just the first one who would even have me, so.
Oh, I don't believe
so
that.
That's why
I
married her.
Too.
No, I'm not easy to deal with, to live with, let me tell you.
Well, neither
she'll
am I.
She'll be the first one to tell you.
You know, maybe if you can find someone that matches your own neuroses, it's that's when you know it's the one.
That's true. That's true. So, do you have any siblings?
I do. I have a younger sister. Her
really?
Name's Amy. She plays hockey and goes to University of Toronto and is going to be a math teacher and live in Oakville in
That's cool.
Canada.
She's yeah. younger than you?
She is. She's 25. Four? Ooh. 24.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so what did you say? I asked you a question. Oh, so did you grow up in a conservative home?
You know what? My parents aren't necessarily conservative. I went to a Christian school growing up.
Right.
Plus, you know, I don't attribute like any virtue to myself because I didn't really make a, you know, adult decision for my beliefs or for God until I was right. in my 20s. But
I see.
I was always really tall, Sam, and uh-huh. I kind of had some bad skin. I was rocking some bad skin. And so that was like, you know, nature's birth control. So I really wasn't, you know, the guys. I wasn't the number one pick
in
my high school, believe it or not.
The school?
No, that came later.
I see. Okay.
I blossomed into a beautiful swan. No. No, it's funny, but, you know,
I was
being tall,
really
I kind of intimidated the guys anyway,
yeah.
and I was weird,
sure,
and
yeah.
I was, like,
very
into
weird.
Comedy, and, like, you know, it just wasn't.
Yeah. It is intimidating for a guy, I got to tell you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the few tall women that I've met in my life, not that I went out with them, but tall women, like, really
yeah.
tall women. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's like you try to stand on your toes just uh-huh. to kind of like be seen, you know?
Yeah, I'm a shorter girl, and the guy that I was dating recently, he's 5'10", which is shorter than I usually date.
Right.
I like to date skyscrapers. And but no, he said something about the heels that I was wearing. He was like, yeah, do you always have to wear such tall heels? I was like, oh, I'm sorry. We need to go ahead and nip this in the bud right now. I always wear heels. I mean, I'm not even that tall, but with heels, I'm about 5'5 or 5'6,
yeah.
you know?
Right.
And if you
can't handle the woman getting more attention than you, don't
yeah.
date Kara Kimbrough. This girl is a Tasmanian devil,
yeah.
and, you know, it's like she doesn't
whore.
Play small. She's an attention, you know, I wouldn't say that, but she's right.
I'm not annoying, right, Sarah?
No, I love it.
Okay.
I'm Team Kimbrough, but, you know, there's people that, there's a lot of guys that, you know, want a girl that's very demure and
right.
and in the background, and so, you know, just know. Knowing that, you know,
yeah.
don't.
I mean, I've tried to be that quiet girl. I really like, I know how it feels to like want to, like, I really tried. I got like through a couple dates where I was like demure and like, not too funny. Don't be too funny. Just be normal.
Or don't
just
be too
normal.
Opinionated. Or...
Yeah. Yeah. Don't be too much of anything. Just be.
And
just,
then I'm
just,
like, disappear.
Wear your flats. Just be calm. Just don't look anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it never works out, you know.
No,
sooner or later the crazy comes out and you know, it just doesn't work out.
Yeah.
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 That's okay. I'll find my
Yeah. So I mean, but do you feel you're ready in your life? I mean, if you've met someone right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm totally
would...
open.
Well, of
I'm
course,
ready.
You're probably horny as hell by now. How much longer can you wait?
Well, I don't know, but having all of this man in the room is really
yeah.
We're like about to devour you right now.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Well, Sarah, you've been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining
well,
us.
Well, thanks for having me on,
great morning.
Sam.
Of course.
Yeah,
you're welcome anytime.
Thanks.
Anytime. And Kara, any big plans for the weekend?
Sarah and I are actually filming a digital short, right?
Yeah, there's a local comedian, Marisol Medina. She's fabulous comedian, did the Groundlings and everything, and she's putting together a comedy short, so we're going to
really?
Do that.
Really?
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Crazy ladies.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to watch it. You're going to put it on iTunes?
It's going
to
be online.
I mean,
so.
On YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be on YouTube and online, so I'll for sure send you the
Sounds
link.
Good.
And we'll keep everybody awesome. That's listening updated on Sarah's film, where they can look at it online. It's being shopped around right now and in some, you know, some legal, you know, legal meetings.
I love you, my PIMP.
So what my point is
my big PIMP
it is,
right over
Sam,
here.
It is so funny that I'm just really? Like, oh my gosh, she just tears it up. So my point is I want people that are listening to know where to go find it. But right now it's not online because of it's, you know, legal issues. But
oh, yeah. Okay, well, we'll promote it later out and everything. All right. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back here on Monday.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. To get in contact with the show, please send email to info@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.